I'm Echo.
And I'm Ether. Welcome to another Cohere Technologies Deep Dive podcast.
I want you to imagine looking up at the night sky and knowing that every single satellite passing over isn't just, you know, beaming you internet.
Right. It's actually actively scanning the atmosphere, yep. like a planetary radar.
Exactly. Or like walking down the street and the local cell tower isn't just connecting your phone call. It's physically tracking the movement of cars, pedestrians, maybe even the wind blowing through the trees.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds completely like science fiction, right? But it's actually the very real immediate future of how we communicate. We're talking about a complete reimagining of the invisible world around you.
Right, because we usually tend to view our cellular networks as these giant dumb pipes in the sky.
Yeah, just invisible plumbing.
Exactly, plumbing that just ferries our texts, our emails, and our web traffic from point A to point B. But today, we're exploring how a massive, painfully expensive problem in the telecom industry is actually forcing a fundamental rewiring of that infrastructure.
And it is a massive problem.
It really is. The mission for today's dive is to understand how an advanced shift in math and physics is transforming our entire global cellular network, taking it from a simple communication pipe into a giant real-time radar sensor.
And I should point out, this isn't just about getting faster download speeds. This pivot fundamentally changes how the digital domain interacts with the physical space you occupy every single day.
To guide you through this, we've got a fascinating stack of research. We're unpacking two Appledore research profiles on Cohere technologies from 2024 and 2025, plus a highly detailed 2026 Terrell research paper on 6G waveforms.
Oh, that Terrell paper is incredibly dense, but so important.
Oh yeah, we've distilled it all down for you. We're taking you on a journey from the very real financial headaches of telecom executives all the way up to low Earth orbit. Okay. Let's unpack this.
We really need to start with the foundational problem driving all of this innovation. And that problem is, well, spectrum.
Spectrum.
Yeah. For wireless operators, spectrum is the absolute undeniable lifeblood of their business. It is the invisible real estate of the airwaves, and it's heavily regulated and auctioned off by governments.
And because it's finite, I mean, you can't just invent a new radio frequency out of thin air. It is shockingly expensive.
Unbelievably expensive.
To give you a sense of the scale here, the U.S. government has raised $230 billion in revenue just from spectrum auctions over the years.
Wow.
Yeah. And in March 2021 alone, U.S. operators spent an eye-watering $81 billion to acquire C-band spectrum licenses.
And that's not just a U.S. issue either. Over in the U.K. in 2021, operators dropped £1.36 billion just to secure the 700 megahertz and 3.6 gigahertz bands.
And that's just the right to use the air. That doesn't even include the cost of the physical towers.
Exactly. The core issue here is that as demand for wireless data absolutely explodes, these networks just get congested. When a cell site hits its limit, calls drop, your streaming video buffers, and, well, customer satisfaction plunges.
So the traditional mindset for telcos has basically been, if the network is full, buy more spectrum. Or, you know, build more cell towers or deploy really expensive hardware upgrades like carrier aggregation.
Which is not cheap.
Not at all. Just upgrading 30% of a large operator's macro sites with a carrier aggregation layer can easily cost $1 billion.
Right.
It's like trying to solve highway traffic by exclusively buying up neighboring land to build more lanes rather than just figuring out how to manage the cars better. It takes years, it causes massive disruption, and costs a fortune. So what does this actually mean for the telco executives stuck in this endless cycle?
Well, what's fascinating here is that the emerging solution doesn't require laying down new highway lanes at all. The 2024 Appledore research profile is a software fix developed by a company called Cohere Technologies.
Okay.
It's called the Universal Spectrum Multiplier, or USM. Instead of buying new spectrum or new hardware, USM is installed directly into the existing 4G and 5G base stations.
Wait, just software? How does a software update avoid billions of dollars in hardware costs?
By fundamentally changing how the existing hardware is utilized, without touching a single antenna, radio, or user device. This software effectively doubles the capacity of a cell site.
Doubles it?
Yeah, we're talking about a 50 to 100% boost.
Yeah.
And this isn't just, you know, a lab experiment. It's been proven in dense urban field trials with major operators like Vodafone and Bell Canada.
Okay, I have to push back here because magically doubling capacity with a software update sounds like downloading more RAM for your computer. It sounds fake.
I know, it really does sound too good to be true.
So to understand how that actually works, we have to look at how cell towers see the world right now.
Right.
Because my understanding is They don't see it very well.
They really don't. Currently, the vast majority of our networks use either FDD frequency division duplexing, which uses separate frequency bands for uploading and downloading. That's common in low and mid-band ranges.
Right.
Or TDD, time division duplexing. That uses the same band, but rapidly switches time slots. That one is a lot more common in 5G. But regardless of FDD or TDD, the standard communication waveform doing the actual heavy lifting is called CPO-FDM.
Let's avoid the alphabet soup for a second. CPO-FDM basically relies on a two-dimensional model, right? Time and frequency.
Yeah.
It chops up the available spectrum into a grid, like a giant piece of graph paper, and assigns your phone to one of those little boxes.
That's a really good way to look at it.
Yeah.
But there is a massive fatal flaw in that 2D model. It suffers from a phenomenon known as channel aging.
Channel aging. That happens when things move, correct?
Okay.
Because the world isn't a static piece of graph paper. You're walking, cars are driving, wind is blowing through trees.
Exactly. Every time something moves, it changes how the radio signals bounce around the physical environment. Because CPO-FDM degrades incredibly fast, the channel ages or fades unpredictably. So the base station has to constantly stop, reevaluate, and guess how to reach your phone again. It wastes a massive amount of network capacity just on this constant readjustment.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Cohere's USM completely abandons that 2D model.
Yep.
Instead, it introduces a three-dimensional model by adding a spatial dimension.
Mm-hmm.
They call it delay Doppler modeling. But hold on, let me make sure I've got this.
Sure.
Instead of just shouting data into a specific time and frequency slot and hoping my phone catches it before I walk around a corner, the tower is calculating exactly how fast I'm moving and where the signal is physically bouncing off buildings in real time.
It's actually a bit more nuanced than just tracking you, but yes. It's mapping the entire physical pathway.
Yeah.
Delay measures the distance the signal travels, like the time it takes for a radio wave to bounce off a glass skyscraper and reach your phone.
Oh, I see.
And Doppler measures the speed.
Like the Doppler effect, the classic ambulance siren analogy, how the pitch shifts higher as it speeds toward you and lower as it drives away.
Precisely. But instead of sound waves, we're talking about radio waves. Your movement causes a shift in the frequency. By continuously calculating both the delay and the Doppler shift, the USM creates a highly stable, predictable map of the radio channel.
So it stops guessing.
Exactly. It stops guessing and starts predicting. In fact, it can predict the state of the channel up to 50 milliseconds into the future.
50 milliseconds might sound like a blink to you and me, but to a base station processing millions of bits a second, that has to be an eternity of predictability.
It is an absolute eternity. By operating in this delay Doppler domain, the channel stops that unpredictable fading. It locks in.
Wow.
And here is the real kicker. One of the biggest headaches in traditional networks is inter-carrier interference. Usually when things move fast, signals bleed into each other and destroy call quality.
Right, the dropped calls.
Yeah, but delay Doppler actually turns that interference into a source of diversity. It uses those multipath reflections, the signal bouncing off three different cars and a wall, to its advantage, combining them to make the connection stronger.
That is wild, which explains how they squeezed double the capacity out of the exact same spectrum. They just stopped fighting the physical environment and started using it.
Exactly.
But if the network is now mapping distance, speed, and physical reflections just to keep my connection stable, it inadvertently creates a massive byproduct. We suddenly transition from a clever telecom fix to an absolute AI data goldmine.
Because the delay Doppler model is constantly tracking all the energy, all the interference, and all the physical reflectors in your environment to optimize the signal, it's effectively generating a continuous real-time radar map of the physical world.
Yeah.
And it's perfectly overlaid with the wireless world.
Okay, I have to stop you there because the scale of that is blowing my mind. You're telling me that just by trying to keep my YouTube video from buffering on a crowded street, my local cell tower is accidentally generating a real-time digital twin of my neighborhood's physical layout.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that's exactly the paradigm shift we are looking at. According to the 2025 Appledore report, taking this massive stream of physical and wireless channel data and feeding it into modern AI and large language models creates something entirely new.
What are they calling it?
The industry is calling it an intelligence plane.
An intelligence plane. So we have the data plane that moves the actual text messages, the control plane that manages the routing, and now this intelligence plane sitting right alongside them.
Yes. And this intelligence plane provides continuous learning. It doesn't just pass data. It learns the traffic patterns of the city.
Yeah.
It learns the effects of a sudden rainstorm or a parade blocking a street, or even the specific geographic quirks of a neighborhood. It completely transforms the definition of a telco network. It's no longer just a system for moving bits from point A to point B.
Right.
It becomes a system that possesses real-time location data of all physical energy in its domain.
Which opens up entirely new applications and revenue streams. If you're a telecom operator and you know exactly how physical objects are moving through your cell grid, you have a product that goes way beyond selling 50 gigs of data a month.
Exactly.
You have real-time municipal data.
Yeah.
But this mapping is currently happening as a byproduct of fixing 4G and 5G. It naturally makes you wonder, if the network is already doing this accidentally, why not design the next generation to do it on purpose?
Which brings us directly to the Terrell research paper on 6G and the concept of ISAC. That stands for Integrated Sensing and Communication.
Okay.
ISAC is widely recognized as a core pillar of the upcoming 6G standard. Specifically, 3GPP release 21, which targets the 2028 to 2029 timeframe. The goal of ISAC is to do high-resolution radar sensing and wireless communications simultaneously on the exact same spectrum using the exact same hardware.
But the Terrell report makes it incredibly clear that our current 5G waveform, CPO-FDM, is failing miserably at this.
Yeah, it really is.
Because it's stuck in that 2D time frequency grid, trying to force it to do radar sensing requires a 5 to 20% overhead. You're sacrificing a massive chunk of your communication capacity just to clumsily sense the environment.
Right.
It's like trying to use a flashlight to tap out Morse code to a ship while also trying to use that exact same flashlight to illuminate a dark path in front of you. You can't do both perfectly at the same time without flickering the light and ruining both jobs.
That's a perfect visualization. To do ISAC properly, to send data and use radar concurrently without penalty, you need a completely different foundational waveform.
And what is that?
Well, the crazy thing is the math for the ultimate solution was actually discovered decades ago. Back in 1964, an information theorist named Dr. Philip Woodward proved mathematically that for a radar system to accurately track an object, the waveform has to be localized in both delay and Doppler.
Okay.
Time domain pulses alone or frequency domain pulses alone just aren't good enough.
So, enter ZOC OTFS, orthogonal time frequency space. This is the waveform that finally fulfills Dr. Woodward's 1964 requirements.
Yes, exactly.
And it does it using something called a pulsone. Now, a pulsone sounds like something out of Star Trek, but it's basically a carrier that combines the sharp pulse of a traditional radar with the continuous tone of modern communications, right?
That's right. The ZOC OTFS modulation technique essentially converts the 3D delay Doppler data into these time domain pulsones. And because it operates natively in this delay Doppler domain, it satisfies what physicists call the crystallization condition.
The crystallization condition. I love that term. It sounds like the moment water freezes into ice, everything just locks perfectly into place.
Yeah.
It's the regime where the relationship between the input signal and the output channel becomes completely predictable with no deep random signal drops.
Exactly. It creates a completely stable non-fading channel where both massive data communication and high-resolution radar sensing coexist perfectly without stealing a single resource from one another. But we have to address the elephant in the room. Why didn't we do this 60 years ago?
Right.
Historically, there was a massive physical barrier to actually deploying this. The math required to process this 3D grid at the receiving end, like inside your phone, was unbelievably complex.
Right. The matrix inversions. The reports mention this. My understanding is that traditional silicon chips solve complex math by brute force. They look at a massive mathematical matrix and essentially check every possible answer one by one to invert it.
Yeah, it's incredibly intensive.
But with ZOC OTFS, the matrices are so huge that standard chips just couldn't do the math fast enough for real-time communication.
Spot on. It was computationally prohibitive.
Oh.
But technology finally caught up. In November 2025, the industry hit a milestone that shattered that barrier.
Yeah.
A real-time neural receiver running on an NVIDIA Edge platform was demonstrated.
A neural receiver?
Yes. Instead of doing those brute force matrix inversions, this neural architecture used AI to dynamically learn the channel. It delivered 100 to 1,000 times speed up.
Let me make sure I'm wrapping my head around this. Instead of a traditional chip trying to solve a million-piece math puzzle piece by piece, the neural receiver acts more like human intuition.
Yes.
It just recognizes the pattern of the signal instantly without doing all the long division.
That's a fantastic way to frame it. And it did this in real time, converging within a single symbol period without needing any pre-trained offline models.
Wow.
that NOR receiver completely eliminated the complexity objection. It proved that SACO TFS isn't just a white paper theory. It is commercially viable right now.
So if I'm zooming out here, 4G and 5G were basically communication networks that we eventually tried to slap sensing onto as an afterthought.
Right.
But SACO TFS is fundamentally a high-grade radar system that we figured out how to seamlessly attach our text messages, Netflix streams, and internet data to.
Yes, the DNA is reversed.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is natively a radar waveform, SACO TFS can resolve an incredible number of targets simultaneously. The math shows it can resolve what engineers call O of N targets.
What does it mean in real life?
In practical terms, that means tracking pedestrians, hundreds of drones, and high-speed highway traffic all at once. And it does this with vastly superior resolution compared to alternative radar waveforms the industry was looking at, like AFDM, ODDM, or standard FMCW radar.
And what's wrong with those alternatives?
They suffer from something called range Doppler coupling. Essentially, if a target is moving really fast, those systems get confused about exactly how far away it is. The speed and distance calculations bleed into each other. SACO TFS completely decouples them, giving you perfect clarity.
Okay, so SACO TFS is clearly the perfect waveform for fast-moving targets in a chaotic, crowded city. But the Terrell research didn't stop at the city limits. If you really want to test the absolute breaking limits of speed and distance, you don't look at a highway, you look up.
Oh, yeah.
You take this technology to space.
This is where things get truly wild. We are talking about non-terrestrial networks, or NTN, low Earth orbit, or LEO, satellites. These satellites are moving at over 27,000 kilometers per hour.
Which is just absurd. Trying to hold a stable internet connection with a Wi-Fi router that is literally flying over your head at 27,000 kilometers per hour.
It is a nightmare for traditional physics. That kind of extreme speed generates massive Doppler shifts, up to plus or minus 50 kilohertz. And the sheer distance creates a 25 millisecond propagation delay just for the signal to reach Earth.
And OFDM can't handle that.
Under these extreme conditions, standard OFDM simply breaks.
Why does it break?
Remember that grid of time and frequency.
Mm.
To keep the signals from interfering, OFDM relies on subcarrier orthogonality. That just means the signals stay perfectly in their own designated lanes without overlapping.
Okay.
But when the transmitter is moving at 27,000 kilometers an hour, the Doppler shift smears those lanes together. The orthogonality is destroyed.
So how do they fix it right now?
To force OFDM to work with satellites right now, operators have to use incredibly cumbersome workarounds. They have to mandate special GNSS tracking chips in the devices, use extended processing times, and strictly limit your connection to a single satellite at a time to avoid destructive interference.
But SACO TFS actually thrives in this chaos, doesn't it? Because it operates in the delay Doppler domain, those rapid, extreme Doppler changes aren't seen as interference.
Right.
It just registers them as static, stable channel conditions. It basically neutralizes the speed problem entirely. And because it handles interference so well, you don't have to restrict the connection to a single satellite. You can pull down signals from multiple satellites at once for a stronger connection.
Exactly. But the implications of that go so much further than just keeping a phone call connected in a remote area.
How so?
Because SACO TFS is natively a radar waveform. When you deploy it on a satellite constellation, you are simultaneously doing ISEC from orbit.
So what does this all mean in the grand scheme? We went from how do we stop dropping calls in a crowded coffee shop to our internet satellites are now a global radar net tracking weather and ships from space.
This raises an important question for you to consider about the very nature of infrastructure. The tools that we built exclusively to communicate are natively becoming the tools that observe, measure, and understand the physical dynamics of our entire planet.
Wow.
A SACO TFS-enabled LEO constellation is not just an internet provider anymore. It becomes a persistent, multi-static global radar network. It tracks commercial aircraft across oceans. It tracks maritime shipping lanes. It maps dense weather systems, all while providing zero overhead communication data.
It is truly a fundamental rewiring of our reality. Let's take a breath and summarize the journey we've just been on. We started with the invisible finite constraint of spectrum, the billions of dollars telecom operators are forced to spend just to survive congested networks.
It's a huge bottleneck.
Yeah. And then we saw how Cohere's delay Doppler software breaks that 2D barrier, solving channel aging and doubling network capacity without needing a single new tower.
Right.
We explored how this 3D mapping inevitably evolves into an AI-powered intelligence plane. And finally, we looked at the 6G future, where ZAC OTFS Pulsones standardized this technology into a global ISAC radar network, perfectly capable of mapping everything from a pedestrian crossing the street to a hurricane viewed from a satellite moving 27,000 kilometers an hour.
This completely reshapes the future of your connectivity.
Yeah.
It signals the end of the era of dropped calls and the beginning of an era where the network intuitively, continuously, and physically understands the space around it.
Which brings us right back to the invisible architecture we started with. The air around you right now isn't just ferrying data anymore. It is actively feeling its way through the room. Which leaves us with one final thought to ponder. If every single 6G cell tower, every connected car, and every low Earth orbit satellite is constantly mapping the physical world, tracking every drone, pedestrian, and raindrop to ensure perfect connectivity, at what point does the communication network become the most comprehensive real-time surveillance sensor of Earth ever built? And who ultimately owns that digital twin of our reality? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the invisible world around you and keep learning.